This is DC Talk, episode number 60, here on September the 8th, 2019. As always, I am your awesome host, Mike. Good to see you with us. Good that you're listening, that I am in your ears for the duration of whatever trip you're on right now. But I can't do this alone. I have with me my other outstanding co-host, Carrie. What's happening?
What's this about a trip? I thought the network had a strict no drug policy.
Some people are tripping. Is that what them young people are still saying these days?
I have no bloody clue.
I have no idea.
I'm doing
either.
Good, though.
Carrie, good.
Yes.
Good deal. Yes. Well, I thought with such a momentous occasion as episode 60, we need to get somebody else on the network to come and join us today. So I thought about getting somebody that's around that age. Eric, how's it going?
Oh. You want to go there? Okay, so let's go back to this I'm the awesome host thing. I noticed humble wasn't one of the criteria you listed for yourself there.
No, that
attribute was completely
Eric,
gone.
You see what I have to deal with every week.
I do.
Why do you think I stuck him on a show with you instead of me?
Oh, you hate
Eric,
me that
we need
much,
to get a show
right?
Together.
That
me,
was planned, me, Carrie.
Me, oh, right.
Eric, me, you, and Tim need to have a show together. Somehow.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the space-time continuum can survive
can take that.
But, you know, it was Lou's birthday this past week, so happy birthday, Lou. You want to talk about someone who's... Well, I guess it's been a long time since Lou's been 60, but, like, still, it's...
Wow. We
made
Eric,
old jokes
right?
on Echo Base
I know.
Tonight. Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Looking forward to talking about some interesting news coming out.
Yeah, you know,
week.
I didn't look through the show notes here, but there's one thing I want to talk about. And I'm scrolling through to see if. Okay, I can hijack that one. Okay. Yep, we're good.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Okay. Well, before you hijack that, let me tell everybody else how to hijack themselves into Discord. Go to randomchat.com/community. To get a link toward our Discord server where you can join us, talk with us. All of our main lobby and our show channels are absolutely free to you. But if you want to give and donate $1 a month and become a contributor to our network, that is at patreon.com. You can also find that link on randomchatter.com/community. And for $1 a month, you get everything in the Discord channel. And we just added a new perk, by the way, for the $5 and up members. I believe we did, Eric, didn't we?
I think so. That one's Tim's fault.
That's Tim's baby. So
I don't have all the details.
Wrong, we can blame him for not being.
And
here.
I tell you how to find out all the details. Go to randomchatter.com/community and sign up for Discord. It's in the announcement channel in Discord.
Well, there's that too, and you can do that as you said for free. The app is free. The server that is in the announcements channel, which is also free. And you know we do have a section of Discord that. We it's not so much that it's behind a paywall as much as it is that we wanted to have a way to give something back to the people who help support the network. So we created additional channels as a thank you to the people who help us keep the lights on. And so there are other channels there. But as you said, there's a channel for each one of the shows on the network that is completely free and everybody can access. And that announcements channel that has the details about the new Patreon perk is also free, and I kind of know the details, but I'm going to let people go discover it on their own by going to randomchatter.com/Patreon. That way, there's a little bit of a tease there.
Ooh. That way they have to do some of the work that we can't do everything for them.
Exactly. That's some I just dropped some psychology on you.
Yeah.
Make people curious.
You know what else is free? Our email, dctalk@randomchatter.com. So why don't you email us, give us your thoughts on Titans or whatever else it is like that. Also, my advice or our network's advice on @randomchatter on Twitter or @DCTalkPod for this podcast. You can get my wonderful advice on Twitter @TheDCFanboy. That's @TheDC_fanboy. And Carrie, what about you?
I don't know what you want my advice. Yeah, that's very disturbing.
Again with the humility.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I am the most humble person you will meet on this network. Go, Carrie.
Right.
I mean, the confidence is there, so I appreciate that, I guess.
One of these days, I'm going to get him into an arm lock, and then we'll see how humble he is. Yeah.
I believe if I were to get into a throwdown with Carrie, I would never get back up.
No, you would literally be thrown down.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And I would laugh.
Right.
I would fall on the ground, too, but I'd be doing it to myself from laughing so hard.
Anyway,
Carrie, where can they find you?
My Twitter handle is Carrie Blackfire 42. That's K-E-R-I, Blackfire 42.
And Eric, when you are on Twitter, where can they find you?
I don't know, because it's been so long since I've been on Twitter. You can give me what I like to call a sympathy follow at Eric Blythe. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E.
All right. And you can find all their shows at randomchatter.com. Eric was talking about Echo Base earlier, so you can find Echo Base online. You can find the Random Chatter, the main show online. So check them out. Leave reviews for us again on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play. We want them so we can read them on the air. With no further ado, our DC quote of the week is this: all men have limits. They learn what they are and learn not to exceed them. I ignore them. By Batman.
Yeah, and then my teacher yells at people for ignoring their limits and injuries for the prescribed time period that they are supposed to be, you know, taking care of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fatigue mm-hmm. is a big factor in injuries and safety.
Yes.
Well, if that's it, let's go ahead and into our news.
Okay, so the Birds of Prey teaser is confirmed to only be released in theaters, which makes me kind of sad because I won't be in a theater anytime soon, at least not until
and YouTube.
I'm sure it's
only in theaters and YouTube.
I think I saw it. I could be wrong.
So spoiler. There's so much stuff. So if you don't want to know, spoiler warning. The teaser started off with, like, you see the balloons from the movie It going up, and then Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn pops the balloons, and starts pretty much just puts Joker, like, I don't need Joker anymore. And
she's like,
I've had
so
enough of clowns.
Yeah, I've had enough. It's an interesting teaser. I saw her a little earlier today. And it actually made me a little more excited about the movie than before. Mm. I like this.
I watched it on my phone, and so I didn't do the whole freeze frame and catch a lot of the stuff. And there was quite a montage of scenes there that I think there would be a benefit of picking apart, like stuff with the Huntress.
I saw Ian McGregor in the Did you catch Ian McGregor in it?
No.
Yeah, he was the
Ewan
guy.
McGregor,
there's a lot of stuff I missed.
He was the so what?
Ewan McGregor, you mean?
Yeah, Ewan McGregor. You saw him?
You said Ian.
Oh, he's
a completely different person.
Yeah.
Is there an Ian McGregor?
I have no idea.
I think he's a UFC
sure
fighter.
Is
that UFC guy?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
No, that's Connor. I don't know. Who cares? too many McGregors
I'm
going around.
I'm kidding.
But no. Ewan was in. He was like the black mask guy in the club with the black hair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the trailer,
right?
So,
yeah,
obviously it was a teaser, so it didn't give you much. But I kind of like the direction DC's going, and not, you know, like screw the connected universe. We're just going to make cool comic book movies.
I like the connected universe too, but I like that they're not limiting themselves to just that.
Right. They can have their connected universe, but they're like, look, we have a lot of cool stories that we don't want to try to force into a connected universe just to tie that thread through it. So we're going to make movies like Birds of Prey or like Joker, which is not connected to any of the main universe. We're just going to tell cool stories.
I just wish they also had a main universe. The argument that, hey, it's good to do things aside from the main universe is correct, but in order for it to be aside from the main universe, there has to be a main universe to be aside from.
Well, there is. The DCU with the Justice League and Wonder Woman, Aquaman, that still is considered the main universe that they are.
I guess they're still Wonder Woman and Aquaman.
Right, and they're going to bring into Shazam into that universe eventually as well, from what rumors are. So what they're attempting to do is they are going to course correct from while they're still in that main universe, but keep it, but kind of course correct it from the what they people would say is the bloodshed of BVS and Justice League and all them, which they weren't that bad, but but they are going to kind of small-wise course correct it, but still keep that the mainstream, okay. And then play your movies like Birds of Prey and Joker and The Batman that's coming out with Robert Pattinson. They're not going to be connected to that story, but anyways, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Speaking of the Batman movie, there is something I saw floating around on Twitter that they're maybe looking for a person of color to play Catwoman, and someone was floating Leslie Ann Bryant from Lucifer to play Catwoman, which would be amazing because she's never awesome. She plays Maze on Lucifer.
I've never seen the show. Does she play in anything else?
She was in the first season of The Librarians.
Again, also, another show I've never seen.
I'm just you know, showing my tolerance for cheese now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, she's awesome. She's like, if you've seen any of the fight sequences she and a couple of the other characters on Lucifer have been in, she can kick a lot of butt, and it would be really, really cool to see her as Catwoman if they went that direction.
Cool.
Good.
Okay.
What else we got here tonight for a little bit more news?
Okay. So DC Comics is rumored to be introducing a Black Batman
in 2020.
And in 2020, looks like some of the possibilities, I mean, they've talked about, you know, they're talking about Batwing, which has been Luke Fox at one point. I see his thing here about Black Lightning, which
right,
would be
so
interesting.
They said, I mean, if they
I know Azrael's been Batman for a bit.
So
the whole thought
with Black Lightning was that if they wanted to keep it into somebody who's already in the league and would already be the athletic ability enough to maybe Batman has to lay aside the mantle for a little bit and just to keep his presence out there, that Jefferson
Pierce would do it. Which he's done before.
Here's the problem. So first of all, depending on DC's motivations for doing this, if you're trying to create diversity and you want to have a Black Batman, taking an existing Black superhero and moving them into a different costume isn't actually increasing anything. It's a zero-sum game.
That is true.
Yeah.
That doesn't actually increase the level of diversity or representation amongst the superhero community. So I don't think they're going to do that. My take on this, and I didn't know anything about this until you said something, I'm against this not because of any diversity issues. Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Yeah.
And there are some comic book characters that you can replace with other people. I'm all for the Miles Morales Spider-Man, for example, but then we also still have the Peter Parker Spider-Man, and they're both kind of there. Every time that we have gotten rid of Bruce Wayne in the past, it has either fallen apart or it's that we've known they're bringing Bruce Wayne back, so it doesn't really count. You can't get rid of Bruce Wayne, and you can't have someone else step in as Batman, because Batman as a character, as a hero, is so wrapped up in the very specific psyche of Bruce Wayne that once you get anyone else into that role, it's not the same character. What makes Batman a fascinating character is not his powers, because he doesn't have any. And it's not merely being rich, because there are all kinds of rich people. It's the psychology of that individual that makes Batman, Batman.
Unless they do something like they've done with the Arrowverse and make...
Don't give me spoilers, because I haven't seen the last couple of seasons.
Oh, I'm not giving you any spoilers. This is from, you know, back when they introduced Wally.
Ah, okay.
I mean... It could be a matter on a different Earth. Batman is a Black man.
I'm cool
Wayne
with that.
Bruce Wayne is a Black man.
But don't just do it just to do it.
Yeah, don't just do it just to do it. It has to make sense.
Right. Like
there
like,
is exactly one comic book character that they better not ever kill, And this goes across DC, Marvel, Image, IDW, whoever.
Archie Bunker.
And that's Bruce Wayne.
Oh.
Because Batman is so iconic, and what makes him iconic is the specific psychology of that particular individual person. You can have different Supermans. You can have different Spider-Man.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Don't care.
I was just about to ask you about what about Superman?
Nope.
Because they've done that. They've done that.
Right.
Yeah, they
they've done that.
They tried to do it with Batman as well.
Yeah, they tried to do it with Batman. They had Azrael replace Bruce Wayne during Nightfall. I think Dick Grayson has stepped into the cloak and cowl.
And I love Dick Grayson.
I love Dick Grayson too. I prefer him as Nightwing, but there have been a couple of times. I mean,
still waiting on that Nightwing movie.
I am too.
I am as much a fan as Nightwing as I am of Deadpool. And listeners probably know what a Deadpool fan I am. Like, Nightwing is my superhero.
I could see,
but even when he's Batman, he's just wearing the costume as a fill-in.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't have somebody put the costume on just to put the costume on, you know, as a fill-in. You have to have somebody who, if you're gonna thread this story, you've got to do it exactly right. So somebody who is going to be Bruce Wayne and not just going to be somebody who's, like you said, a fill-in.
Well, I think Mike, you've seen, I think it's Bad Blood.
Yes.
The one where Talia captures Bruce and Dick has to go masquerading as Batman until they get him back.
Yes.
Yeah. So there have been times, and this is going back to Nightfall too. There have been times when someone else has had to be Batman, just because there has to be a Batman. But it's usually because Bruce Wayne is not available for some reason. Either his back is broken, or he's been captured, or
he's busy
whatever.
With Catwoman.
But the times that they have done away with the character and replaced him, not just a stand-in, but like, okay, this is the new Batman.
Even when Azrael did it,
we knew that it was temporary. I mean, back to your question, Mike, like Superman, because Superman is about the powers. If you talk about, like, describe Superman to me, well, he can fly, he's got X-ray vision,
but...
and blah, 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 blah. And you come across the Boy Scout thing, but, like, that's not, there are a lot of people who are idealistic.
Right.
Okay, that's not, like, a uniquely defining characteristic. Even Wolverine. Well, you know, Sabretooth could be Wolverine. And I'm using a Marvel example here on purpose to explain that it's not just a DC thing. It could be any character anywhere. I don't have that big of a problem replacing them. I could probably come up with an exception somewhere, but Batman is Batman because of what's going on in his mind. You can't just put another person and have him put the cape on.
Kind of veering off on the rabbit trail, you mentioned the Boy Scout attitude of Superman. That's probably why I liked Man of Steel so much, is because they didn't portray that Boy Scout attitude in him in the Snyder universe.
Yeah.
They actually made him struggle as a human. And I kind of like that. I think that's probably the reason I drew to that Superman better. But anyways.
Well, and the other thing is, like, you know, I admittedly I wasn't quite as plugged into the comic verse back when they did the death of Superman, but I think there was a question at some point about whether or not Clark Kent as Superman would come back, and that's when they filled the void with, you know, Superboy and Steel and Cyber Superman and all the others.
Yeah, they were I remember those days. They were insisting that Clark Kent was not coming back. I mean, they lied through their teeth, but they insisted.
Yeah.
I mean, CNN covered it and everything. It was a big deal.
Hmm.
But
it's not like when they did the Death of Superman movie and then they did Reign of Superman and, you know, Superman comes back. It's like, no, we actually had at least a year or so of him not being around.
Right.
You had a question?
And it was long enough that people believed, well, maybe they really are telling the truth.
And then we got the blue lightning Superman, and that was just
Yeah, the energy Superman. So, Carrie, you are a fan of Joe Michael Straczynski, or JMS, as he's affectionately known, the creator of Babylon 5, Sense 8, various other things.
Mostly Babylon 5. I have watched a couple of his things. I couldn't get into Sense 8 for some reason. It just
I couldn't either. But I'm more of a Babylon 5 Crusade fan, and some comic books he did: Rising Stars, Midnight Nation.
I think I read bits and pieces of the Spider-Man comic he did.
I was going to ask you about the Superman comic that he did, because apparently he rebooted Superman specifically to bring in the current generation of, like, millennials and the generation after that into Superman, and apparently it was wildly successful and did a really good job of it, which, given it's JMS, doesn't surprise me. I was wondering if you read it, because
I haven't read it yet.
Okay. I'm of the Boy Scout opinion, and I'm like, the character doesn't interest me, but apparently it specifically fixes that perspective on Superman.
Well, and since we're already off on so many tangents here, I'm sorry, Mike.
This is why you don't bring me on as a guest onto a podcast, dude. You should know better.
Eric and I have taken over the show. Mike's just going to sit back and watch football. It's fine.
I love it.
when they were doing Man of Steel, I think that was part of the reasoning behind the direction they went with it. Is like, you know, how do you bring a character like that into, for better or worse, a post 9/11 world where, you know, suddenly aliens are suspect.
Right.
You know, this is not the 1950s anymore, where, you know, people can just, you know, someone can just show up and have these godly powers, and almost everyone seems to be fine with it. Now there is some inherent suspicion in the society we live in now, and to put actual aliens, not just, you know,
right,
you know, people migrating all over the planet into the mix, that's something that, you know, Man of Steel, the last few seasons of Supergirl, stuff like that, has been dealing with.
Right. A very upfront, in your face kind of attitude right now.
Yeah.
On an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And in some ways it's kind of necessary, because, I mean, you know, otherwise, I mean, there are things that are being taken for granted, and things that are not being addressed that really should be. And if someone can see it in the aspect of, you know, dealing with, you know, an actual aliens being on the planet, and how that would be handled, as opposed to, you know, just, you know, various migratory patterns of humans. I mean, that maybe helps breed a bit of compassion into the psyche.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone, either of you, have been watching Carnival Row, but
I've got it on my list.
It's amazing.
I got too much. But
it's only 8 episodes so far. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same. It's kind of a similar storyline, where it's like, you know, you have people who are, you know, at one point, you know, humans and Fae were, you know, pretty simpatico, and then suddenly, you know, something changed, and now the fairies are all being put into a ghetto. So, you know,
right. Well, you know, what does comic that, books in general,
yeah,
have always been really good about reflecting different social issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest social issue that is basically the root of almost all social issues that we have, whether it's racism or sexism or classism or any number of different things, is people are not comfortable around things that are different than they are.
Right.
And it scares them. They feel threatened by it. Mm-hmm. And so that's something where, I mean, one of the reasons the X-Men were created, Superman always seemed to represent patriotism and mm-hmm. heroism and ideals of doing the right thing, the whole Boy Scout stereotype. But then once it was approached that, what if we tackle it from the fact that he's a fish out of water, that he's an alien? Well, now we're focusing more on the fear that's caused as a result of him being different and so overpowered that even when he tries to do the right thing, it can go badly and there's consequences of that. So to me, that's what made, going back to Man of Steel, that's what made that Zack Snyder take on it so compelling. And to me, that was the most interesting version of Superman I've seen. The movie itself had flaws as a film, but that take on Superman is my favorite so far.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of worth noting that, you know, we're also recording this on, you know, the 53rd anniversary of the first airing of Star Trek. So that's something else that's saying that,
oh,
no, humans can't, humans can, yeah, you have the resident Trekkie on the podcast, so but you know that is, you know, the vision of, you know, humans can get past where we are right now and how crappy we are to each other and get to a place where we are better than, you know, that was Gene Watt Roddenberry's vision, that we are better than where we are right now, and the only way we're going to survive is to make ourselves better than where we are right now mentally.
Yeah,
well,
but I think we've
digressed into a random chatter.
This was all Mike's fault.
It was absolutely my fault. But somebody else who's been up to some business is Patty Jenkins, hadn't she, Carrie?
Yes. Apparently she has inked a deal with Netflix. To do what? I'm not entirely sure.
We don't know. We know it's a 3-year deal that's about $10 million. We don't know exactly yet she's inked it with.
Netflix is recruiting her. They've been recruiting Benioff and Weiss. They've been recruiting a whole bunch of people, so
Netflix has been busy.
Yeah, and yeah. That's another. If you guys haven't been watching Dark Crystal, that's another one that was really good.
Yeah, I don't have time for that.
Yeah, I know you.
I'm in the middle of. I'm in the middle of a rewatch myself right now, and I've got another 5 seasons to go through, so I'm stuck right now.
Yeah, you didn't know the original movie either. That's okay.
That's all right. What else is going on in our world of DC?
Yes. So Mark Hamill has said that his career would have no punchline without Batman the Animated Series, which, you know, I mean, I think he's not wrong. I mean,
if only he could find a science fiction franchise.
Yeah,
right. That would pay him a lot of money.
A science fiction franchise or 3 that he could, right, you know, poke around in for a while. Although, I will admit that, he is one of the voices on Dark Crystal, as I was mentioning. He's voicing one of the Skeksis. And the Skeksis cast is just like Jason Isaacs, Benedict Wong, Mark Hamill, Simon Pegg, Awkwafina. Wow. Like that. These are just the bad guys. But all of Mark Hamill's villains sound the same, and I really don't care. Because it's Mark Hamill and he's awesome.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with the scientist sounding a bit like the Joker has been smoking 5 packs a day.
And this all came about because of...
Because this is the 27th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series. And Kevin Conroy, who voiced Batman... Posted, on Twitter, 27 years ago today, Batman the Animated Series premiered. Thank you, Bruce Timm, Eric Rodminsky, Paul Dini, Alan Burnett, Andrea Romano, and everyone at WB Animation for allowing me to be a part of this incredible ride. And thank you to all the amazing fans, you're all incredible.
Still possibly the best animated series to ever hit television.
Absolutely.
I agree. Like, that followed very closely by Gargoyles, which I'm still bitter about.
It's okay. We're going to get to see Kevin Conroy here in a few months on TV anyways.
That is true.
In the Crisis. So I'm excited about that. It's going to be great. So a couple of other news topics that I want to bring. We're going to talk a little about the Joker movie and kind of move us into our discussion. Apparently, the Joker movie was at the Venice Film Festival this past week, and it won the top prize at the Venice Film Festival, which was the, I can't remember, was it the Golden Lion?
Yes,
Golden Lion.
I just know it was Best Film.
For Best Film. So, we know it's been earning a lot of reviews. It's got an 88% right now on Rotten Tomatoes. It's gotten a lot of high remarks for it. They're already pushing for Joaquin Phoenix to be in the running for an Oscar.
Oh, let the movie come out first, people.
Please. I agree, because the problem is when you have all this hype and it doesn't do well, it's going to look really bad on the movie. But it did win the top prize at the Venice Film Festival, and didn't it earlier? Was it this one? No, it wasn't this film festival. It premiered at another one.
It was an eight minute
standing ovation for the movie.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous, but
listen, I hope to be proven wrong, and I hope that I like the movie. I just have no interest in it. And the fact that the praise has been almost unanimous, I've seen nothing but good reviews. I've seen no bad reviews. I'm not interested in, like, I'm interested in the movie from the sense of the psychology that's presented and everything, but just call it a clown that goes insane and becomes a serial killer. To me, like, labeling it the Joker without the context of, like, anything related to the comic book or to Batman, to me, sounds like a money grab for a movie that was really just about someone who lost his mind and became a serial killer.
Yeah, we'll get into that here in a second, too.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine.
No, it's okay.
The one scene, and I'm not saying you should get an Oscar because I haven't seen the movie yet, but the one scene in the trailer, whether it makes it a movie or not, where you see him walking down a hallway in the trailer laughing, and then when he cuts the corner, immediately drops. Like, his face just just completely change of attitude. That's pretty good acting to me. I mean, that's a pretty good setting for where the tone's going to be in this movie as well.
The performance in the trailer was definitely done very well.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
It is projected to be among the highest rated R movies of all time. They are projecting it to be around 100 million its opening weekend, which would which be the new October high. That's what they're they said long on a report from Box Office Pro. They're already tracking it to crest $100 million during its opening weekend. The current October record belonged to Venom, which made $80.3 million in its opening weekend.
But Venom wasn't R-rated, was it? I don't think it was.
Yeah, I thought it.
No, I think Venom was a very hard PG-13.
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Please hold.
Carrie's looking it up. No, that's just because Venom was the highest grossing movie in October for an October release on a weekend.
Okay.
So that's what they were referencing. They also said that.
Venom's PG-13.
Yeah. But they are looking at to go over $100 million. Some people, box office numbers, they're assuming that this movie has the potential to gross over $210 million in its domestic haul, which would break into the top 15, they said, in R-rated films, and it would put it right between the movie 300 and Wedding Crashers. It has the potential to really kind of go, and I hope the buzz is not, you know, all in vain. I hope it's not, you know, just maybe the film critics like it, but the you know, we've seen it before where the critics absolutely love it, but when Rotten Tomatoes mm-hmm. gets the score, when the fans go and see it, and it completely tanks in the fan and the audience score. We've seen movies do that. So it could be one of those cases, and I hope it's not, but it could be one of those cases.
I think the two potential hurdles this movie is going to have is that, number one, I think that there's going to be a large part of the audience that is going to see that it's a Joker movie, and they are going to expect it to tie into Batman somehow. And when there's just
somehow
zero
that's
reference
obvious.
Well,
Batman, other than Bruce, I think Thomas Wayne is in the movie.
Well, there's also a scene, if you, I'm trying to remember, it was a still grab in the last trailer where you had a dad and a mom when Joker was at the movie theater running out. Behind the door was supposed to be Tom and Martha and little Bruce Wayne, and then on the movie now showing poster was the same poster that was in the BVS trailer.
Okay,
I mean,
but
BVS movie.
That's an Easter egg.
Right, so that's the only way I would see it tying into Batman, because it's not supposed to tie into Batman.
But you do a DC podcast.
Right.
You are very well aware that it's not supposed to tie into Batman.
But your general audience
when
isn't.
My mom hears that there's a Joker movie, she's going to assume it has something to do with Batman. When my next door neighbor hears that there's a Joker movie, he's going to assume that it has something to do with Batman. We know because we keep up with this sort of thing, but I think that there's going to be a hurdle for the mainstream audience. And the second thing is that movies typically like this have slower pacing and typically don't spoon feed people what's going on, especially if it's something going on internally with the character. And I'm okay with that. I don't want it spoon fed.
Right.
But I think the combination of the two, I think people are going to have to focus more heavily on the movie than they feel like. And I think that it's the pacing is probably pretty slow, and I think that's going to throw a lot of people off as well. I think that this movie is going to suffer from people's expectations going into it not being on the same page as the movie itself.
Right. And you also have the issue where you have people who have seen it and have already rumored to try to push Todd Phillips into creating a sequel to this movie when it's not even hit theaters yet. The only problem, the issue I see with that is this seems to be one of those movies that needs to be a one-and-done deal. Some movies you don't need to build a sequel to. If you're building this guy up to be the Joker in this movie, by the end of the movie he takes on the persona of Joker, there's no need to put a second prequel movie with it to build it up.
I mean, I guess we know he doesn't die at the end.
But, yeah.
If they're pushing for a sequel, right?
Unless they pull shade over all of us, and instead of actually making this guy Joker by the end of the movie, they have this guy create the idea of a Joker.
So you think they do a Gotham thing on,
right,
on
to,
it?
To,
and,
right. Right.
I was just going to say that.
To kind of pull a Gotham idea here and create the ideology, but not actually create the man.
They could, but I think
And then that would leave them open to do a second movie if they really wanted to, some guy actually picking up the mantle in the second movie. But I don't think they're going that route.
Because this movie is so much about this particular man, I don't think that they're going to have it where he dies and he just passes on the concept to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not that this hasn't been done ad nauseum before, but, I mean, we've already seen that happen.
Right.
And to have that happen again, I mean, yeah, it could, you know.
But a lot of people stopped watching
Gotham.
There
are people who like repetition. It's fine. But, you know, let's do something different.
Well, speaking of the Joker movie, we're going to kind of do a little bit of a discussion before we hit our DCTV discussion. And that is that the Joker movie is apparently already stirring some controversy before it's already hit the theaters. According to some critics who have seen the movie early, Joker runs the risk of being perceived as glorification of what one angry and disturbed loner is able to accomplish. The kind of message, as our writer says, is severely ill-timed as continued strings of mass shootings and other real-life acts of terrorism has sparked widespread discussion about what kind of violent men there are lurking in the societal underbelly. So some people have, a month before even the movies come out, they are worried that the film's main antagonist, the film's main character is sympathizing, in the movie is sympathizing with a homicidal loner at a time when America and the rest of the world are plagued by gun violence. So here's my question. I'm not going to ask you which side of the line you fall on, because a lot of people are... So everywhere I've seen... I'm trying to put this so it's not political, but at the same time, it's also not going to be offensive to anybody. How do you view this movie? Do you think this movie is, I don't want to say worth this controversy, because obviously some people are offended by it and bothered by it. Yes, the movie does come out at a very bad timing, although this movie was planned a couple years ago before this string of mass shootings has taken place in our country.
So I think I might be able to spin it in such a way where the question becomes non-political.
Okay, go for it, Eric, because okay. I'm trying to find the words here.
I think I can rescue you, Mike. Okay, so I think the political issue about like mass shootings and stuff like that that's been going on here in the United States has primarily been about gun control, because that is a very divisive political issue here in the United States. Yep. But I think that whether you feel that the accessibility of firearms contributes or not, it seems everybody agrees that mental health issues contribute.
Right.
Agreed.
So the people who don't see an issue with the guns feel it's a mental health issue. The people who do see an issue with the guns feel that it is also a mental health issue. Okay, so I think in that regard, we can probably remove the politics from the question and then say that we have, here in the U.S., we are at a time where we have more support for mental health issues than we ever have. However, a lot of times when someone does hit the breaking point in a mental health crisis, the results are becoming more catastrophic than they have in the past. So it's an area in which we've been improving sociologically while also simultaneously failing in a different direction. And I think that's where sometimes the political issue comes in. So it's hard to answer the question without having seen the movie. But we can make certain assumptions. We know enough about the character of the Joker to know that he has mental health issues and that those drive him to become sociopathic, so that he can't sympathize or empathize with other people in society. When other people get hurt, he doesn't feel anything about it. And then to become psychotic and basically a serial killer. A mass serial killer. So I think that it's one thing when it happens in a comic book. It's cartoony. You've got people flying through the air and shooting laser beams out of their eyes, etc. A movie like The Joker, this particular rendition of The Joker, the whole point is to make it very realistic, to remove superheroes from the film entirely. And that's another reason why I don't really like that this is removed from Batman. So if you removed the Joker name from this, because it looks like you could.
If you remove the Joker name from this, and this is basically just another, you know, mentally disturbed white guy who is going off on a tear. And this is,
and then
this,
how
is
can...
this has been a pattern for years now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so how can you not then question? So again, let's pretend that it's not called Joker, it's called Steve. Okay, and go through the script and remove every instance of the word joke and replace it with Steve. Okay, the movie's still going to work. The performance is still going to be there. The actions and motivation, everything about the story is still going to be there. Okay? So, if you do that, how can you not make some comparisons to what's going on around us with mental health issues leading to violence? And then if you do that, if you're in any way glorifying this character or trying to make this character sympathetic, then it becomes a very dangerous thing. And I think that's where the concern is. I share the concern. I'm not convinced that this movie is guilty of doing that because I haven't seen the movie.
I think from the whole tone of the trailer, it seems that they are trying to get you to sympathize with a down and out guy who just cannot get on his luck, who can't make it, who's having trouble. It looks like it's his mom he's having issues with, and he just can't get a job. But by the end of the movie, it looks like one of those where they want you to sympathize with the villain, with the guy, and then by the end of the movie, you absolutely hate the guy because you realize what he has done.
Maybe.
So
that's entirely possible.
But
that's what we have to find out.
But I do agree with you. So I see both sides of the aisle on this. I feel that it is very, unfortunately, when this movie was placed on the schedule, it came at a very ill-timed. There was... Yes, I know we've had mass shootings here in the past couple of years, but there was no thought 2 years ago when this movie may have dropped onto the October schedule line over at Warner Brothers that there would be a string of three shootings in Texas.
This has been more than two years. I'm talking about this time. I get what you're saying.
Right, with like three in Texas, one in California, another one in Ohio. Within the last month, virtually. You know,
within a period of a couple of weeks.
Right. They couldn't have planned this. So this movie, I don't think would have been as, and this is an argument made somewhere else, as controversial a couple decades ago if it had come out. Because it wasn't as prevalent as it is now. Now, I will say this. I do empathize with the crowd and sympathize with the crowd that does feel that this movie should, you know, some people want this movie to be postponed to a later date and say, you know, we're not going to do this movie or just scrap the movie because you know, we're only feeding into that hostility. I don't agree with that because the movie's going to get out regardless. But
who's saying it though? Is it the people who have seen the movie or is it the people like us?
Well, you have people who have seen the movie who want it scrapped, and then you also have people who take that, the trolls, and say, okay, we're gonna follow this crowd because we're gonna agree with these people, and let's just get rid of. We've only seen the trailer, but we think that they're right, so we're gonna agree.
Well, there's
with
a really important question.
Okay,
and the question is, how does it present the issue? It can take one of two different directions. If it takes a direction where, I mean, because we all basically know how the story is basically going to play out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if they take the direction of we're sympathizing with the character, and then, you know, at the end, he does all this stuff, and it's a result of how everybody else treated him. And now they're getting their just desserts and all that kind of stuff. If it's making him overly sympathetic and turning him into a hero by the end of the movie, then that sends a very dangerous message. And some people will take that message and who are suffering from mental health issues, and it's going to be a problem. If they take the approach that this is a demonstration of the consequences of mental health issues when they go unaddressed and unhelped, and how things can spiral out of control. And if they use this as a, as a precautionary tale,
right?
Yeah.
Then maybe they can use that to spin it in such a way that not only is it not detrimental, it could be helpful. I think that It all really just depends on what they do with the movie, and we don't know. Some people know, but we don't know yet.
It could be used as a tool to shed the light, to shed some light on an issue that's going on that people that people don't seem to see or don't want to see. Now it's going to be in your face. You have to see the issue that's going on.
But knowing Hollywood,
that's not the route.
And no offense to Hollywood, but just it's more sensationalized when you don't go that route. So, and it also becomes preachy when you do go that route, which turns a lot of people off, which affects your bottom line at the box office. I think that of those two things, it's probably the former and not the latter. Yeah. I don't think it's going to come across to most people as a precautionary tale. I think it's just going to be this fun ride of a spiral down into the deep chasms of someone's psyche, and it's going to be everybody watching the train wreck that results, and people are going to walk out of it looking at it as like an art house film and how brilliant is it and how good the performances were, while other people are going to go, hey, that character's just like me. I've been beaten down. My life has fallen apart. I can't catch a break. Yeah, I totally get this guy. And then, hopefully those people will find the help they need, and some won't. And I'm not trying to say that we should blame anything that people do on this movie either. But while I don't think that video games and movies are to blame for the level of violence and stuff that some people believe it is, you also can't say that normalizing this sort of activity doesn't also have an effect. So it really is going to be entirely dependent on how it's treated in the film.
Right. I mean, I agree. So, I mean, I don't want to say whatever side you fall on the issue, because you see, here's the thing. It's just going to be about what you think when you walk in that movie, how you perceive it. The movie's going to come out. They're not going to postpone this movie. They've already put a bunch of money behind it. It's going to come out regardless. I don't think it's going to affect the bottom line of this movie. Although I know that's not the big thing. This movie's going to make what it's going to make. You're going to have people who are going to go there and you're going to see it because they want to see it. Then you're going to have people who are going to go in there and see it because of this issue that's going on. They're going to say, okay, well, how do they portray it? So it gives me more fuel for what I need to push something or go with something. So this movie is going to come out regardless. Wherever you fall on it, I mean, that's between you and whatever's like that. We've had violent movies we've had mass murder movies in the past. Not probably at a time where we're at right now in our society. But we've had these things before. We've had these movies before where somebody goes out and just murders a bunch of people. We've had The Killing Joke, although I know that was an animated movie. That was a pretty violent animated movie as well. And you saw the deep psyche of the Joker in that one. Here's the thing. Anybody who is...
There's a whole different tone in animated movies than something like this.
Right, right. I know. But anybody who... If you say the name Joker, even a non-comic book fan understands who the Joker is. Normally, they're going to look at it as crazy guy, enemy of Batman, that kind of thing. They're probably going to view that. So anybody seeing this should understand or should know. If you're listening to this and you don't know who Batman is or Joker, why are you listening to us? I mean, we want you to, but you know that. But anybody who knows Joker understands that this guy is mentally disturbed, is a psychopath, and just as I love the way that Alfred put it in The Dark Knight, just wants to see the world burn.
Mm-hmm.
And that is who Joker is. Knowing that, what this movie's going to be. It's going to be a psychopath, a man who is mentally disturbed and just wants to see the world burn. Because if he didn't get no luck, he wants to see it go down.
But the question is, are they trying to make him into a hero?
Make
him sympathize with the Joker in The Dark Knight. They showed his motivations to some extent. And it's one thing to give an origin story and explain the character's motivations. It's another thing to intentionally make us sympathize and feel bad for that character and to root for them. And again, they've got a really delicate dance here that they need to do, and it's hard to analyze this without having seen the movie to analyze it.
Right. Eric, we need to have you back on. After this movie comes out and we go watch it, we need to have Eric back on to roundtable discussion.
And listen, as much I'm on record for saying I'm not like that enamored with this film, but I am enamored with psychology in general, and I am definitely willing to give the film a chance. And I would love to come back on when you guys discuss it. Absolutely.
Well, it's also entirely possible that pulling this movie, even if they were to pull it, might, you know, make the issues worse. I mean, I know Mike didn't watch Buffy, but I don't know. Eric, did you watch all of Buffy?
I was never able to finish all of Buffy, but I got.
Did you get through season three?
I got through about five seasons.
Did you get through season three?
Yes.
I watched
all of the first eight episodes, all of them.
All first eight. No, because there was an episode that they pulled around the Columbine shooting that when they finally went back and aired it, it was like, no, what they thought was going to be a kid committing another school shooting turned out to be a kid going up to, you know, the bell tower to kill himself with a rifle, and it was something completely different. It's something that they could have used to help, you know, society in general work through what had happened with, you know, something like Columbine, and they just, you know, the network got scared and pulled it.
I'm of the belief that people are in general way too hypersensitive about things.
Oh, I agree.
But that being said, this particular issue has become such an issue that's hit critical mass so badly.
Oh, yeah.
And we're failing as a country to address these issues. Whatever the solution is, that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah.
But there is not, like, there's just nothing being done.
Right.
And so this is an area in which I can't write it off as being people being oversensitive necessarily.
Yeah.
I think that there actually is a legitimate issue here that has hit critical mass and that has become an epidemic of sorts, and it's got to get dealt with. And I think that how we present violence as being sympathetic, like, it's one thing with Deadpool because it's ridiculous. It's over the top. And even that's rated R, and not everybody should go see it. But what violence is there is so ridiculous and over the top that there's no way in which anybody thinks that that's supposed to be like a real thing. But this movie looks like they are going for such realism and really trying to make you feel the pain that this character goes through. I worry that the approach that they're taking isn't maybe going in the wrong direction.
True. But and don't forget, the same parents that took their kids to see Deadpool are going to be the same ones that take them to see Joker 2.
Those parents, I would love to find those parents in a dark alley somewhere, and we could have a discussion about
Batman. But I think that was a very good discussion. I think that was a needful discussion. So, you know, look, and from here on DC Talk to our listeners out there, if you are listening to us right now, And look, if you need to reach out, find somebody to reach out to. Don't stay there by yourself. Find somebody to reach out to, talk to. If you have some bad thoughts or you're struggling, find somebody that you can reach out to that you know can help you.
You have to talk.
Talk to somebody.
You have
don't keep
do
it
not
in.
Stay silent about it.
So
you have
so
to.
So this
talk.
Is our random chatter public service announcement right now. Find somebody to talk to if you need to talk to somebody. Don't hold it in. Don't bottle it up, and whatever you fall in this Joker movie, it's going to come out regardless here in about a month. So we'll see on the other side what they'll probably do. But we need to move on to our final thing for tonight. This is an unusually longer episode of DC Talk, but that's okay because we have the late.
It's unusually long for summer because we only have one show to discuss.
That's right. Because we have the great Eric Blythe with us, so that's why it's, you know, we have, when we have him, we got to keep him long as we can.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. But we're going to go ahead now and move on into our DC TV discussion. Titans, the show I have been waiting for to come back for a while now. Season 2, Episode 1.
Let's go.
Not that one. Trigon.
Not that one.
Summary is this.
Oh, because they had this whole storyline with Bumblebee joining the Teen Titans and the summer camp.
No,
and
it's not that one.
Wrong Teen Titans.
I thought that's what you wanted me to watch before the
recording. No, no, no.
No.
This is the live action Titans. Season 2, Episode 1, Trigon. The season premiere continues the apocalyptic events of last season as Trigon sets to win over the Titans to his side by embracing their inner darkness.
And there's the four-eyed monster I've been waiting for all season.
Yes.
All last season.
And the very fact, let's talk about Jason Todd. The very fact that Jason Todd is riding a motorcycle in Wayne Manor is absolutely great to me. I don't know why.
No, he's channeling the Batman Forever Dick Grayson and doing it badly.
I don't know why.
I still want to punch Jason Todd in the face. I'm sorry.
I think we all hate Jason Todd, I love this version of Jason Todd.
I've always hated Jason Todd. I've even started like not being very nice to people named Jason or named Todd.
But this guy plays Jason Todd extremely well.
I will give you that.
But
he makes you love to hate him. Is the way I feel.
I will give you that. He is very good at making me want to punch him in the face.
By the way, I did love Hawk's Batman impersonation where he threw his hands up over his eyes. I do love the chemistry.
Well, okay, I will admit that I found that a bit odd that apparently all the OG Titans, at least as far as the live action show goes, know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. That's like, really?
Well, they used to work with, you know, Dick Grayson, so obviously.
Yeah,
they
worked with Dick Grayson doesn't mean that. Okay. Never.
But I must say, as much as we hate Jason, I want to see more of him and Hank as a chemistry in this season. I think the way they play off of each other in the first episode was absolutely brilliant between him and Jason.
I agree.
I thought it was really good. It was nice to see to get the Justice League shout out on Titans.
Yeah, I like that they're actually letting the Titans do so many Justice League shout outs because I mean, at least they're somewhat connecting this to the rest of the DC universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at least they're allowing it. Unlike, you know, we had to go, what, 5-6 seasons before they would let Stephen Amell say Bruce Wayne on Arrow.
Yeah.
Or talk about Batman. So.
And then we have the whole scene at Rachel's house where Trigon was trying to infect all the Titans, and they all went into their inner darkness and were affected and beat the crap out of Gar.
Yeah, poor Gar.
Poor Gar.
Gar just suffered. I was wondering if he was going to turn into anything else besides just a lion or a tiger.
Well, he turned into a snake.
Exactly. That's what I'm like. Okay, cool. He turned into a snake. Something different. But no, I think the way they approached them, I liked the way that you saw Corey's issue where she burned Rachel to unleash her inner darkness. I liked the way that you dealt with Wonder Girl and saw her struggle with her losing her father and then finding the guy and wanting to kill the guy. And that was unleashed hers. And then I'm trying to think of who else it was. Jason's.
Well, Hawk and Dove basically played off each other with their, like, one's darkness was the other one's darkness, so that they kind of just they kind of had to give in to despair together.
They had to share.
Yeah,
they had to share.
And then Todd's inner darkness was shooting Dick in the head with the gun that killed Bruce Wayne's parents.
Well, I like that Jason's delusion was pretty much bouncing off of what Dick's was at the end of last season.
Right.
So basically, they basically just put him into the logistical end of that delusion, and, you know, had him take revenge for Bruce.
And you could definitely tell, I think, with that scene and with the end of, with Trigon and Rachel, you can definitely see where they finished filming last season to save that part for this season. And then begin filming, because I know me and Eric were talking. We were talking about a little earlier where they filmed last season was up to, I believe, where after she beats Trigon and she walks back to the house, and that's where they finished filming. And then you, when you see Rachel in the next scene, it's almost like completely different. She looks completely different than she did in last season.
Well, her hair was different as soon as soon as she embraced her powers and beat Trigon. So I pretty much figured that was, you know, an intentional change with her embracing her powers and such.
So
I did love how they did the effects with her powers. That was awesome.
It was really good. I did love how they tied up that storyline. It kind of moved right into the one with Deathstroke.
Yeah, can we? Yeah. And that's the other reason I want to punch Jason in the face. Like, it had to go be him that blabs at the camera, and Deathstroke
back.
Showing up this season is Jason Todd's fault.
Yep, absolutely.
They could have gone at least half a season of having nothing much to do and or just fighting just random bad guys, but no, Jason had to go and shout into the cameras and get the
publicity. I'm happy to blame as much on Jason Todd as I'm able to. But you know, the last two scenes of the episode, I thought were the best parts of the episode. The scene with Dick Grayson and the scene with Deathstroke, that whole segment. Like, that made the episode to me. Otherwise, I'm like, oh, okay, this is a good episode, but, you know, it's good. And then that stuff happened, and I was excited.
So, first, I agree. What did you think of... Okay, I'm going to try to figure out how to think about this. I love how the first place Dick has to stop by is Wayne Manor and talk to Bruce. After just having this inner darkness of murdering Batman, he said, I need to go talk to Bruce.
Well, okay, so last season was all about him trying to work through his issues with why he left. And him having to face that at the end of last season, at the beginning of this season, with, you know, the logical where he was going, where he mentally was trying to go, or where Trigon was trying to take him, to deal with where his darkness is. I think it was completely logical to go and talk to the guy who basically raised him for the last, you know, 12 years and say, look, this, I've had all these issues. I blamed you for a lot of them. Some of them I blamed you correctly, and some of them I didn't. And I didn't realize how much you did for me until I was, you know, until I had to work it out on my own.
And in fact, had he not gone through that experience, he might not have been in a place where he was ready to have that conversation.
That's true.
Right. I didn't really honestly know who that was at first. I really thought it was Alfred.
Yeah, I was confused.
Right, I thought it was Alfred at first, because we knew he had talked to Alfred earlier in season one.
Right.
So I figured that
I went on IMDb while I was watching.
Well, no, I knew they had cast Ian Glenn.
Is that who I think it is?
No, I knew they had cast Ian Glenn as Bruce Wayne.
But he was a very old Bruce Wayne.
I knew
they
had cast him. I'd forgotten who it was.
Right.
As.
like.
So what did you think about this version of Bruce Wayne, though? I mean,
I love the actor so much, it's hard for me not to love the fact that he's Bruce Wayne. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's like, I kind of want to see him suit up as Batman, but I'd be fine if he didn't, because he can just be Bruce Wayne for every time we see him, and I would be perfectly fine with that.
I think he's going to stay. I think he's going to stay Bruce Wayne. Like, I don't think, okay, they could, but I don't think you're going to get I don't think you're going to get him as Batman in this series.
No, I think
I would
think
be
you
okay
may.
With.
I think they may talk about him being Batman, like just like they've you know, talked about, you know, how the Justice League was, you know, dealing with something somewhere else.
Right, but they're not going to make
and
him suit up.
I'd be perfectly fine with that.
They shouldn't. It's not about Batman.
Right,
no,
it's
exactly.
About, it's about Dick and Bruce's relationship. That's what it is. It's not right. Dick and Batman.
Right.
It's not Batman and Robin.
Right.
Although there is also, I mean, there's the parental issue, but there's also, you know, the student teacher relationship there, which is really kind of fascinating. Just, you know, that is a very profound type of relationship.
I did
in and of itself.
I did like that scene where they were talking to each other, drinking tea. Some things are going to be a mystery then. Huh. That was...
Yeah.
I wonder where you learned that. I love that banter back and forth, which makes me sad because Bruce was pouring his own tea. We don't get an Alfred yet. I want to know...
No, Alfred was off doing something
I know.
Else.
But...
Yeah,
I
remember with the Justice League.
Yeah.
Because Alfred...
Mm. Instead of Batman. But no, I thought it was good. I enjoyed seeing Bruce in this. I know last season, when they were talking about it, my thoughts were, I don't want Batman and Titans. I don't think we need Batman and Titans, because this is a Titan show. But I think I'm okay with just Bruce, as long as we don't get the Batman side. Because, I'll be honest, that Batman looks like he couldn't take too many punches.
You didn't watch Game of Thrones, did you?
No, well, this is also not Game of Thrones. This is Titans.
I understand that, but if you had seen Ian Glenn doing some of the fight sequences in Game of Thrones, you would not be...
No. I'm talking about his character as Bruce. Looks like he could not... He almost reminded me more of the Kevin Conroy version of Batman in this one.
You expect Batman to be a little more buff.
Right, and buff and not as... I hate to use the phrase, old... Very hate using that word.
What are you trying to say, Mike?
Yeah, what are you trying to say, Mike?
What are you trying to say?
This looks like a very seasoned, past Ben Affleck, old Batman. He looks like he's definitely been in the business for like 35, 40 years, kind of a Batman. He doesn't look like he's the middle-aged Batman or even the younger Batman.
No, he's definitely the older version of Batman.
Right. I don't know if you noticed, but Warren Appleby, who
the dedication,
he was the special effects guy that died on the set while they were filming, and they shut down filming for a few days when he, I believe it was a car accident.
I have a feeling that's who it was, but yeah. I wasn't entirely sure.
Yeah, I had remembered that something had happened, but I didn't remember what it was.
Yeah, that's him. Well, anything else about this besides the Heroes on Training Wheels. I don't need any help from the Heroes on Training Wheels department.
I do like that the tower is strategically hidden in the middle of San Francisco somewhere, and not, you know, a big T
in the middle of the bay.
On an island in the middle of the bay. Because,
right.
Yeah, that doesn't draw attention at all.
I do like how we got... I love that we did get the Titan Tower, like you says, and I do like it how we got it before the Nightwing suit. Although I did think that that's what he was going to Batman for when he says, I need a favor. I thought that's what he was going there for originally, was to get the suit made for him. I figured he was going to say, I need a new suit. But I still don't think we're going to see a new suit, though, for another... I give another 3 or 4 episodes. I think about midway through this season, we're going to finally get a suit. But I don't think it's going to be the full-on Nightwing. We're just going to get a suit, and then by the end of the season...
I'm going to say two.
Huh?
I'm
going to say two episodes.
Okay.
I think he'll have a suit, but I don't think it'll be the Nightwing suit. I think you'll get it later on. It'd be like one of those, like, when you know, for example, when Batwoman's coming up on the CW, you know she's going to get a suit for the couple episodes, and then eventually she's going to paint it and make it her own. I think that's what's going to happen here with the Nightwing outfit, or the suit. He'll get one, but then he'll have to make it his own later on. So, anything else?
Yes.
Oh, I liked that people treated Jason Todd the way I wanted to treat Jason Todd. Though I think punched in the face a few times. Maybe could have been better. And I liked the introduction of Bruce Wayne, of Deathstroke, of Raven getting the jewel on her forehead.
Yeah.
I guess I was a little shocked that they wrapped the Trigon thing up so quickly.
Yeah,
but
that one
kind of
perturbed
surprised.
Me just a little bit. I thought they were going to spend like the whole first episode maybe doing that, and then finishing it at the end of the episode and then moving on real quick.
I would have thought even a couple. I mean, Trigon is supposed to be like this really powerful thing, and it was almost kind of that.
Yeah, Trigon got
that
like all
tropey,
of...
hey, conquer your dreams and we win thing.
Yeah, like Trigon is big enough that they devoted an entire season of Teen Titans to him. So,
yeah. So, like it was okay. I'm not going to complain. It was good enough. But really, I think that having Raven end up where she is, having the new headquarters, having Bruce Wayne, having Deathstroke, like all of these things, I walked away from the episode a lot happier than I walked in.
Yeah, good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, if that is it for our DC TV discussion, because that's all we have for right now, if you want to drop us your thoughts, email us again, dctalk@randomchatter.com. Find us on Twitter. Follow us at randomchatter, at dctalkpod. All of our other Twitter addresses. Let us know what your thoughts are for this episode. And if that is it and there's nothing else, Eric, thank you so much for joining us here on episode 60 of DC Talk. It has been wonderful.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So,
I look forward to doing it again.
We will. We're definitely going to have to arrange a time where we can have you on after the Joker movie, because I'd love to continue this conversation after the movie comes out. I think that'd be be very telling on what they decide to do.
Absolutely.
So, agreed.
Well, until next time, everybody. I'm Batman. Titans are back.
Nice.